Today I want to ask the question, is it possible that Christ has returned? On the one hand, we could answer that question with the cliche, anything's possible. But when we think of that deeper, we reflect on it, we would probably say, well, I guess it's possible, I guess so, maybe. Yeah, I think it's possible. If we ask people about the return of Jesus Christ and how they thought it would occur, you know, kind of like a survey, we'd get a most incredible range of descriptions. Some equate the return of Christ with the end of the world, trumpets blaring, you know, all kinds of devastation, and the people that believed in Jesus would go to heaven, and those that didn't would go to oblivion or hell or some other unpleasant experience. Other people would say, oh, this is great. When Jesus returns, he's going to assert his power over mankind and finally whip everybody into shape and become everybody's Messiah. That's really what he would do. Also, another group of people would almost completely reject him again. And those would be the powerful and probably the ignorant. So that would essentially be a repeat performance from 2,000 years ago. He would be threatening to the status quo, and that would be pretty unacceptable. And those people whose positions of power, money, and influence were seen as being threatened would clearly dispute the fact that he returned. No, that can't possibly be. No, that can't be Jesus. No, 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 that can't be Christ. Others would insist upon outer proof, miracles galore, perhaps, you know, walking on water. Well, that was a small body of water. Could you walk on, you know, like rough water, like the Atlantic during a storm, or you know, those sorts of things in order to prove his presence? Other people who would say, well, I didn't see that, and I think that was staged. That's an illusion. You see it all the time in Las Vegas and in other places. It's a magic trick. It's a hoax. It's a fraud. Many who've been disenchanted with churches, temples, and mosques who hear his message would feel vindicated. Leaders around the world, probably in every country, would try to manipulate his return for political gain. If you believe in this Jesus, he would have voted for me. If you don't believe in him, he belongs to the opposing party, and they're clearly bad people. I think part of the return would exacerbate the conflicts between people holding on to past practices and those seeking Christ-inspired change, that the intensification of that would be with the fearful people driven to fight or run, while the thinking people who were truly, sincerely seeking this connection would pretty much stay in a balanced place. If anything, pretty much everybody would recognize that Jesus, 2,000 years ago, and if he has returned, would be the personification, would be the exemplification of love. And so people who connect to him would demonstrate love. People who feel threatened or angered or whatever would demonstrate other characteristics. I think that when this first became a popularized concept that Christ, in fact, has returned, that the governments would initially form a line shoulder to shoulder, you know, trying to maintain the status quo and protect their individual powers and their relationships. You know, if it's not broke, let's don't fix it. Guys, gals, I got news for you. It is broke. If you look around at what's going on in the world, you can see the status quo is not that good a thing for the average person. For people who make a lot of money from that status quo and have a lot of power and influence, come and say, you know, status quo is not all that bad, not all that bad. There would be a grassroots influence of Christ on the average person, and I think that that would gain momentum and spread, because the average person, the man in the street, in every street around the world, perhaps, could identify it. It wouldn't be identified as a church. You didn't have to belong to a religion in order to listen to and ascribe to the teachings of the newly returned Christ. You would be able to look at that. And I think acceptance of this idea would start to catch on and spread, maybe not like a wildfire. It'll be perhaps slower than that, person to person to person to person. But those little series of waves building ultimately to something that would look like a tsunami of followers of Christ consciousness. There would be around the globe events that resemble Salem witch trials and lynchings in the U.S. South, in which the powers that are interested in status quo would pull out all stops in order to prevent these waves of awareness from spreading. I think it's pretty clear, and this is demonstrated throughout human history, that old ways of thinking don't go away very easily. Is it possible that Christ has returned? It might be helpful to consider why he came in the first place 2,000 years ago. The question, why did Jesus come 2,000 years ago, has a long laundry list of answers depending on your sensibilities. We could say that he was attracted by the fervent prayers of Jews for Messiah. Historically, the Jews in the Old Testament talked about a Messiah that would set them free, give them the upper hand over their enemies, and generally speaking, give them the rewards for being the chosen people that they have appointed themselves as being, and putting up with such long-standing suffering. Other people say that Jesus came 2,000 years ago to sacrifice himself to pay for the sins of humankind, and he paid for them by being tortured and crucified. And by his death, God would now view humankind as redeemed. Political sociologists, on the other hand, would say that Jesus was a creation of his times. I had a high school history teacher who used to talk about that. How is this person a creature of his times? And you don't have to be a high school teacher, and you don't have to be a political sociologist to explore this idea and ask that question. Back in those days, there had been multiple points of friction between the various Jewish sects, and they were certainly not homogeneous. A lot of conflicts going on. Gentiles, Romans, and other groups, all vying for power, and in some cases, just plain survival. A figure that could catalyze one philosophy over another had to appear. There was such a dramatic need. And I think needs literally call forth from, I'll say, divine consciousness, answers. Needs and questions call forth answers and solutions. Certainly back then there was a need for a new set of viewpoints about life, about God, about death, about relationships between people. And perhaps this overriding need 2,000 years ago in the known world was answered by Jesus. Even in the Old Testament, there was much written about the need to be kind and loving and compassionate and charitable and generous with your neighbors, despite the fact that that wasn't really followed very thoroughly by the powers and lots of other people for that matter, where ambition and greed and savagery were the norms. Seems to me, looking at the needs, that if Jesus didn't satisfy some need, he wouldn't have been embraced early on, and his name certainly would not have endured over these 2,000 years. That he threatened other people's needs, and this contributed to his murder, it seems pretty obvious. So, can we agree that Jesus came 2,000 years ago because he was needed? If we restrict the answers to that question to either a yes or a no, I think the answer has got to be a yes. He was needed 2,000 years ago. Then, maybe that same question applies today. Is there a need today in the world for Jesus the Christ to return? You don't have to read much newspaper headlines or listen to many news reports. You can look around, you can feel it, and the answer is, of course, there's a need. However, we could say there was a need before today. There was a need before the Crusades, before the Inquisition, before the conquistadors despoiled the Americas, before the white man destroyed Native American and Native African cultures and tribes. There was a need before and during the Black Plague, during these centuries of European wars of savagery. before the American Civil War, before World War I, which after the fact was called the War to End All Wars, because it was so horrible, it didn't end all wars. It set in motion the groundwork for World War II, which would have been a great time to have somebody show up and change human behavior, before the Holocaust was a need, before the atom bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, before Vietnam, before the Iraq War, before the Afghanistan War. All of these were needs. Why not then? Why now? Is the need today so much greater than any of those times? Is there something about today's environment that makes both the need more urgent and the return of Christ more possible? Certainly today there are many factors of need that are urgent. Some conditions that have been considered normal human struggle are at a terrifying high level and lurking during dangers, not lurking in the shadows, but pretty evident to most people. They're on the horizon and approaching faster like never before. If you were just to look at the economic situation in the United States in terms of homes, foreclosures due to uncontrolled greed of bankers, power brokers, real estate speculators have damaged the economies of most of the world. Not only the United States, but Europe, Ireland, and on and on and on. Shelter, which we would consider a fundamental need since we were cave people, something over our heads that would protect us, keep us warm, is becoming more elusive for millions and millions of people. The lack of work is like negligently putting kindling wood next to a source of sparks. You'd say, well, who would do that? Only the unaware, only the malicious, only the negligent. Look at any inner city ghetto in the world, not just in the United States, anywhere, where there is no productive work, and you will find that crime has become the work of the unemployed men and women. Crime has become the work because nobody has bothered to create productive work. The nation most vociferous in its alignment with Christianity, the United States, is widely viewed around the world as one of the most imbalancing, predatory countries in the world. We start wars to grab the natural resources from others. We have assassinated leaders of other countries who didn't agree with us. We've installed puppets in countries that did agree with us, even though they were brutal to their own people and as undemocratic as a person could be. We've still done it, and it's been recognized. And this sort of thing, from Chile to Panama to Nicaragua in this hemisphere to Santo Domingo to other places, Haiti, is simply a replay of our treatment of Native Americans who had land and resources that the appetites of the white men craved. If you look around now and see the condition of the consolidation of wealth and power into fewer and fewer hands, it's at its all-time worst. Not only here is this a major problem, but elsewhere in the world as well. So few have so much, and so many have so little opportunity. The consolidation of channels of communication, TV, radio, newspapers, into the hands of a few has distorted and toxified, watch the news if you don't, you think that's a little harsh, toxified the information flow into households all over the world. Right now, debates are going on about North Korea's aggressive military behavior towards South Korea, and it's setting the stage for more wholesale death and destruction and, devotion and redirection of resources away from humanitarian behaviors into weaponry. Everybody is getting more and more weaponized while people do without shelter, without food, without health care. Even in the U.S. right now, the pros and cons of attacking Iran and starting yet another war are being argued like that's a sensible strategy. Let's attack another country and destroy, infrastructure, the leadership of the elite and millions of their people. The increasingly ugly arguments for and against the government-controlled sick care program in the United States is bringing human savagery from the shadows right up to center stage. And how people can be driven into a rage at the thought of somebody else getting health care is staggering and horrifying. And when you see what appear to be normal people in these demonstrations that seem to have lost their mind in their rage, it's pretty scary. And so with the fear of nuclear attacks or accidents with regard to North Korea, Iran, or terrorists carrying dirty bombs being at an all-time high, we could pretty much say, Jesus Christ, there is a need. And today would be a good time for Jesus Christ to return. We could look at the medical and pharmaceutical industries that have diverted the thought and the ideal of healing away from God and into their own hands. And it's safe to say that for most people, the God of healing is really the doctor writing a prescription, dosing them with chemotherapy, or radiating them with a nuclear weapon. That's their God of healing. Only for the ignorant does this statement, I will heal you with deadly poisons, sound at all sane. If Jesus were to return in physical form, what would happen? Besides being declared a madman as he was 2,000 years ago, what else? I think people would look at his appearance and bond with what resonated with their previously established images of him and reject the dissonant characteristics. You can almost hear this already. Oh no, another white man? With all the answers? Just what we need. Oh, he's black. My God is white. This can't be Jesus. I thought he would be taller. He's Asian? How can that be? He's a Muslim-looking guy. That can't be right. He's not from my country. Why would I follow him? Is he single? Is he gay? Is he eligible? He would be Times Magazine's Man of the Year and People Magazine's Bachelor of the Year. If he appeared on CNN for an interview, Fox News would have to line up a bunch of talking heads to dispute his authenticity. Every Christian who ever saw a crucifix would run to compare the Christ that they now are seeing to the image on the cross to see if the return Christ is actually valid. Because they know that image on the cross certainly is. Advertising agencies would scramble to align their products with or against the returned Christ. Some churches would sing hallelujah and thank God, and others would be screaming in fear and rage, "Be gone, Satan! Congregations, stay." Government leaders around the world would be saying, "Oh shit, I don't care what he looks like, he's a subversive." For every hour of a Jesus interview on television or the radio would be followed by thousands of hours of pundits, talking heads, and media buffoons telling the gullible what Jesus really meant. These self-assigned interpreters would be right back to doing what they do best, distort information for the purposes of grabbing the ego-based drives of their viewers so advertisers could push products at them. I'm thinking ad agencies would probably resist taking the Jesus Christ account because it would cause all their other accounts to fail. All the products and services that promise but don't deliver happiness would be destroyed by a, quotes, product, end quotes, that actually could deliver happiness. Worse yet for them, the product that Jesus would be offering would be free to all who wanted it. Let me see about that. How appealing to an advertising agency is a free product with no commissions that will destroy all their other accounts? Not very appealing. They would have a lot of incentive to advertise the newly returned Jesus right back into oblivion, and they would be joined by the leadership of the Roman Catholic Church and most of the upper levels of management of other churches. Only the sincerest seekers of Christ would know and believe that this returned Christ is the returned Christ. Why else now, not before? We definitely can see the need. We can also see that the internet and computers have allowed communication from different directions, not just top-down, like it used to be. People all over can communicate with people all over, more than ever before. So the form that Jesus could have taken, in written form using one scribe, lends itself to the least corruption and distortion, to the least need for setting up a hierarchy of translators, interpreters, and talking heads. All make a great deal of sense. What is scary in the letters and the book called Christ Returns Speaks His Truth? What is he promoting? First, he is promoting and teaching certain points of view about existence and God that, when you start to think about them and ponder them, make perfect sense. So to me, that's not too scary, and in fact, very hopeful. The second, he promises that the truth of existence can provide all the thoughts, feelings, actions, and things we are currently killing other people and ourselves by chasing false representations. Now, that's not scary to me, and I don't think it would be scary to other people chasing these things, but it is very, very scary for people and companies selling the false representation. They're selling the wrong things that take people in the wrong direction. And if people were to wake up to Christ's teachings in this book and letters, lots of false businesses would fail. And that, to the businesses, would be mighty scary. Third, Jesus re-describes God, and his description is dramatically different from the God that so many people have been terrorized into believing. God is a God of love. Only. God is not punitive, not judgmental, and certainly not so small that his happiness is contingent upon human beings obeying him. That makes perfect sense to me. I'm thinking that if God wanted to create puppets and marionettes, he could have done that. Fourth, and this may be the scariest of the concepts of all of them to people benefiting from the status quo, and that is, divine consciousness will meet our needs if we will turn to divine consciousness or God for their fulfillment without human fear or doubt. That takes a lot of products off the shelf, folks. And fifth, I'm thinking the scariest part for people who have convinced themselves that the Bible is the pure word of God, uncorrupted by mankind, uncorrupted by the church over 2,000 years, uncorrupted by kings, uncorrupted by translators, will be faced with the task of thinking for themselves. There is a significant difference between following Christ on the way to Christ consciousness and following Jesus. One great difference is that no statues, crucifixes, bobble-headed representations, and no adequate imitation for Christ consciousness could be created and marketed in stores. Stores in America are basically retail churches. You can see people worshiping there almost every day. People who have the product within and their mission, they would recognize as being to understand and experience it and then express that Christ consciousness. People have the Christ consciousness, the Christ within. That's been said over 2,000 years ago and it's being said again. And people would have the mission of understanding and experiencing it in their life, in and around themselves, and then expressing that Christ consciousness. I think that Christ has returned. I like his message. I'm ready to follow this path to my greater reliance on God, divine consciousness. It's not a religion. It's a relationship that individually we can control it and we can harvest it. We can play with it and work at it. That is one amazing gift. And proof of the truth of existence, in which Jesus said that the perfect fulfillment of our every need is available to us. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is a slight modification. I've pluralized some words, but it is a prayer that Christ mentions in the Christ Returns, Speaks His Truth letters, that he recommends that we use before we do prayer and meditation. And it goes, Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know that it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. It is so. Thank you. Amen.